Greetings. My name is Nick, and I'm one of the pastors here at St. Catherine's United Mennonite Church. During this time, when we're unable to gather, we're continuing to record and upload our Sunday meditations for you to listen to online. And we've been grateful for these means to share share words and share encouragement during this time, but I also recognize that it's really no replacement for the gathered activities that we'll truly miss at this time of year. So I do hope you all are well, you and your families, friends, wherever you are, and you're finding ways to remember and to celebrate still in the midst of all this, in the midst of isolation. Our text for this morning comes from the Gospel of John. It's the Easter reading for this Easter Sunday. It's John 20, verses 1 to 18. As we continue to find ourselves in the midst of this pandemic, we've been hearing that it can be really challenging to take it all in day after day. Every day, it would seem, we wake to more news. We rise daily to a different set of numbers, to more cases, more losses, more outbreaks in more places, more stories, more measures, more predictions, and more timelines. Many of us might find ourselves both unable to look at it for too long and unable to go too long without looking at it. It can feel like just this flood of reports and information. And it can often feel discouraging, depressing, overwhelming. We recognize that. And these past weeks and days, news and media outlets have recognized that as well. And so we occasionally see them share these good news stories. You've probably seen and heard some of these over the past few weeks. Many publications, you might know, have set up these dedicated good news sections of their websites during this time, where you might see or hear them shared as little kind of pick-me-up snippets after all the headlines have been relayed. Some of these good news stories are about the pandemic, just generally speaking. They bring maybe a hopeful sense of perspective. Reports that measures that are in place are in many cases truly working. Curves are being flattened in many contexts, we're being told. There's good news about how in some of the hardest hit locations around the world, cases and losses are gradually being scaled back. There are accounts of people recovering, and there are good news stories as well of restrictions being eased back in some places even. Other good news stories that are being shared right now are about a sense of shared humanity that's being seen in this otherwise devastating time. Some of you might have seen an episode of a viral kind of DIY video series that was launched several days ago called Some Good News. In it, this celebrity host plays and comments on various heartwarming clips like that from around the world. Stories, for example, about essential care providers and especially doctors and nurses and other hospital staff who continue to work diligently to provide care through this. These are good news stories about the human spirits, the creativity, the dedication, the generosity and resilience of people in a time of profound suffering. And then there are other news stories that are being touted as good news stories right now as well, whether they're lighthearted or offbeats or just anything that is generally non-pandemic related that's happening right now, really. Stories that remind us that there's still good things, other things happening in the world around the globe, despite this all. There's the sense that we could all really use a good news story right now, because we're just overwhelmed these days, day after day, with bad news. We could all use a good news story right now. And such was, I believe, indeed the case on that very first Easter morning. Like so many of us, the disciples had gone to sleep, still thinking about all the bad news the night before. Some of them might have even struggled, like some of us, to sleep in those fitful hours, unable to turn their minds off at all. because they were still aching from the loss of their friend and their teacher Jesus. Their spirits were still crushed. They're still grieving the awful death he had died just days before and mourning that the community and the movement that Jesus has started were now, for all that it seems, over. The disciples went to bed with bad news, and they woke to it in the morning as well. I heard a few people make this observation as they reflected on these texts this past week, that in the same way that for so many of us, it's become a kind of daily ritual to wake up each morning and check the reports and take it all in. The people in this story are described as waking at the start of that day and going to check on it all. John tells us here in this text that it was early on the first day of the week, that it was still dark, he says, before daybreak. It's first thing in the morning, and we're told that Mary is the first up. And that again, like so many of us, that in the wake of it all, she goes and she checks. Like us, she maybe just can't help herself. And like so many of us watching our world today, watching our world right now, she probably was not really expecting anything different from the cold, unalterable facts of death that she went to look at that day, when she went to look that day. From what John describes, it's not entirely clear why she went to do this, why she would do this, why she would come to the tomb that day to check on things. Had she come maybe to bring spices in order to anoint Jesus's remains, or was she still maybe in a state of disbelief on account of all her shock? Did it maybe feel surreal, like a dream or like a movie, as I've heard so many people, so many of you say over this past month, going through this experience that we've been going through? Or had she simply come to grieve and be near to the one whom she loves so dearly, to be near to where he lay? Whatever the reason, John tells us that she woke early that day and she went to check. And that when she gets there, she discovers that the tomb, the stone that had been placed to seal the entrance of the tomb, had been rolled away. And so, surprised, she takes in this new information. And like it has been for us for a number of weeks now, the news now seemed to get only worse for her as the days went along. Because not only was Jesus dead, but it appeared that his body had been stolen as well. Someone, it seemed, had broken in and taken him. And so she runs and she goes to tell the others. She finds Peter and this other unnamed disciple, and kind of gasping for air and with her heart pounding all the while, she blurts out what had happened, what she had seen. Even more bad news, she tells them. They've taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we don't know where they've put him. Like us today, we can't help but talk about it. We can't help but tell others about the news that we've learned about. We share the reports. We tell the others to go and look and see for themselves as well. And so Peter and the other disciple read, they do just that. They dash back madly to Jesus's grave to go look and see for themselves. John tells us that this unnamed disciple, the one whom Jesus loves, is the first to get there. And he crouches down and peers through the entrance. And when his eyes adjust to that dim light, he sees the fabric that Jesus's body had been covered in, the strips of linen and the cloth that had been wrapped around his head. But he sees no Jesus. Peter, we're told, then goes in and sees this all as well. And the other disciple, after a few hesitant moments, finally steps forward and joins him inside. Then John tells us that, still perplexed, not truly understanding what's happening here, the two of them return to the place that they've been staying. Mary, though, we're told, remains by the graveside. She continued to weep, John tells us, and she looks back again into the tomb. She's maybe caught, like us, in that awful tension, that awful cycle, both unable to look at that painful reality for too long, but also unable to look away for too long as well. And so her eyes, full of tears, drift back to where Jesus was, but now no longer was. And this time when she looks, she sees something even more unexpected. She saw something completely outside the realm of all the cold, horrible facts that she had seen previously and was expecting to see again. John writes that she observes two angels, these messengers who are dressed in white, resting where her friend's body had been, one at the head and one at the foot. And they look at her and they speak to her and they ask her, why are you crying? And so she repeats the report to them, nearly word for word as she had said it before. They've taken my Lord away and I don't know where they've put him. Then John tells us she turns and glimpses something else, something even further outside the realm of possibility as she would come to see it. She sees a stranger standing there, maybe a gardener, she thinks. And the stranger speaks to her and asks her the same question that the two angels had just moments before. Why are you crying? He says. And then he asks another question. Who are you looking for? It's hard to read the emotion that might be coming through these words as they're recorded here, but I can imagine Mary becoming truly upset in that moment, just frustrated that she would have to explain and justify her grief again and again. Why wouldn't I be weeping? This is terrible. Can't you see? What kind of senseless, heartless person would even ask that kind of question? She then points a shaking finger at the stranger and says to him, if it was you who stole my friend away, just tell me. I won't do anything, I promise. I don't care. I just want to see him and bring him back here and lay his body to rest again, like it should be. In response, we read that this stranger simply looks at her and speaks just one word to her. He calls her by her name. Mary, he says. And in an instant, it all comes together for her, and she understands and she sees it clearly. The rolled away rock, the hollow bodiless tomb, the abandoned funeral garments, and the presence of the heavenly visitors. Jesus' body hadn't been stolen away, as she and the others had concluded it must have been. No, Jesus was alive, brought back from death, standing there in the flesh before her and speaking her name. And so Mary, John tells us, goes off to tell the others again. She comes bearing news to them once more. And this time it truly is good news. We could all use a good news story right now. Like many people, I appreciate a lot of the good news stories that are being shared through media and social media right now. I think they can shed light on different aspects, parts of our situation. They can help us give us perspective and also remind us that this isn't final and it isn't forever. They can lighten our mood even and lift our spirits, help us take our minds off things for a moment in this time when we're constantly preoccupied with this all. I can appreciate a lot of the good news stories that are being shared right now. And yet I also recognize how thin and weak they can sometimes seem when held up beside the actual experiences of suffering and death that are taking place in our world right now. Absolutely, they can cheer us up and remind us of human strength and compassion and commitment and care. They can inspire and empower us, I believe, to creatively cope and to offer our own forms of support in this time of need. But do they truly provide hope and comforts in the face of sickness unto death? Do they truly speak into all the fear and the questions in our souls, the lonely struggle of life in isolation or the loss of a job? Do they really hold a candle to what's most deeply and desperately needed when somebody you know is diagnosed, when you've lost someone to this? We could all use a good news story right now, and all the ones that are circulating and being shared are certainly wonderful and little bright lights maybe in these dark days, and I hope they continue to be shared. But maybe we also need a different kind of news story as well. Something much deeper than the sentiment and even the human spirit that's being shared in these stories. Something more hopeful and more powerful and more truly and deeply reassuring that we might find than we might find by distracting ourselves or looking on the bright side at the tail end of the 6 o'clock news. The news that Mary rushed off to share with the other disciples that first Easter was good news for them that day and for us today. It was good news not only because Jesus was alive, but because his aliveness, his resurrection, marked the beginning of an altogether new reality that God had brought about for humanity and for history, and that God is continuing to bring about. As they continued to walk with Jesus in those days that followed and continued to make sense of everything that happens, the disciples would come to see and believe that through Jesus, death had ultimately been rendered powerless. That while still a reality that every person must face and in the end succumb to, death had been defanged. It no longer holds a sting. And that because of what God did on the cross and in raising Jesus up after 3 days, death has no cosmic claim to victory. In Christ, it has no final grip on our lives or our spirits. Those earliest followers of Jesus would come to believe that as a spiritual and physical force in the world, death will ultimately come to be destroyed by Jesus' own dying and rising. And so the news that Mary shared with her companions that day was truly good news. Good news, you might know, is a term that comes off often in our Christian scriptures. It comes from an ancient Greek word, euangelion, which means just that, good news. It's sometimes translated, you might know it as gospel, from the Old English word godspell, or an older text, it might be read as glad tidings. Over time, it's of course been come to use it in all sorts of different ways and carry all sorts of different associations, but in that original sense, it simply referred to a good message that someone had to share. It described a good thing that was reported to others. We read, of course, that Jesus used the term often, talking at nearly every turn about the good news of God's kingdom as it came and continued to come into the world. He talked about good news for the poor, the incarcerated, the oppressed, the sick, and the suffering. Good news of God's love and liberation, God's forgiveness and freedom. And his followers would ultimately go on to include the message of Jesus himself, his life and death and resurrection in this understanding of God's good news for humanity. This word euangelion, or good news, is not a term that was original to the early Christians or the New Testament, though. It comes from this older common use and referred to an important announcement that was made by a go-between or a messenger. People would share good news about an important birth, for example, or a new king that had taken a throne. Or in the Old Testament, the Hebrew scriptures, we find its equivalent often referring to this announcement of victory in times of conflict. Sorts of things we'd still maybe say share today as good news stories. And we know that in those ancient settings, it's often accompanied by running. A messenger would be sent to get the news out as quickly as they could, which is exactly what we see here in John's account of Jesus's resurrection, if we're paying attention, which is significant, I believe. If you're listening carefully or reading along, you'll have noted that there's a lot of running happening in this Easter story. People are seen racing back and forth between the various places described, all in this rush to share what they'd seen and to see it for themselves. They scramble to and from the tomb until that most wonderful news of all is realized and is reported. Which all speaks, I believe, to that incredible sense of excitement and urgency and necessity about what they had come to discover. The writer wants us to know that it's so important that it simply cannot wait, that people are running to tell about it. Mary, we're told, flew off from her encounter with the risen Christ to share the news with others. The good news story. There are still good news stories in our world today. Things are being done. Situations are slowly shifting. People are showing up for one another with kindness and care in moving and meaningful ways. But we also recognize that, like the disciples at the start of this story, we'll likely continue to wake to bad news for days and days to come yet. Even as measures are being kept in place and continue to limit spread, many around the world are sick, and many more will become sick in the days to come. Many losses will be mourned in these days to come. Some of us may come to be told bad news ourselves, if we haven't already. News of how this has all come to impact us personally or impact our family or friends. And so we'll receive it and hold it and take it in, and we'll mourn it and we'll lament it and acknowledge that things are broken in the world, that this is not how it ought to be in God's creation. And we'll surround one another in love and care as best we can in a time of distancing. And all the while, we'll continue to listen and look for the good news in the midst of it as well. Wonderful and beautiful and inspiring good news stories like the ones that are being shared all over the place right now. But also, I hope and I pray this good news of Good Friday and Easter. It might very well feel like we're not there yet, like we're stuck in the world today in Good Friday or Holy Saturday, and that it just doesn't feel right to move on and celebrate Easter quite yet. All the same, we look for it and we anticipate the good news of the resurrection, the good news that God's love shown in Jesus is stronger than death, that Christ in the end has overcome it and will overcome it. That grace that's been extended to us is greater even than the grave. That resurrection, as pastor and writer Frederick Buechner once wrote, means that the last thing is not the worst thing. Like the disciples that day, it might not always be clear. Like them, we might spend much time confused. What's tragedy and what's victory might be truly hard to distinguish in these days, like it was for them. And when we do come to see it, when we come to see the hope of the risen Christ, it might be like Mary, that we see it through tears as she did. And yet all the same, we look for it. So I'd invite you to consider as a spiritual practice these days to limit or find ways to pace yourselves when it comes to your intake of news. Be aware, be informed, be taking it all in, but let those not be the only reports that inform you and inform you as a people in this time. Be looking for Jesus in this time as well, because we could all use a good news story right now. Amen.